It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwood.
And I'm Bruce Gellerman.
And joining us now from Tacoma Park, Maryland, is Arjun Makhijani. He's president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. Hello, sir.
Hi, Steve.
So bring us up to date. What's going on now at the nuclear reactors there in Japan?
Well, we've got a terrible catastrophe evolving here. We talked about spent fuel pools yesterday where all the highly radioactive waste is stored inside the reactor building. Well, there's a new reactor that has been stricken, reactor number 4, where they are having problems cooling the pool. There's been apparently loss of coolant, and so they're also having trouble with the reactor itself, and there's been a fire there. And yesterday there was an explosion in reactor number 2, and that explosion seems to be somewhat different than the other explosions in 1 and 3. 1 and 3 were hydrogen explosions near the top of the reactor building, and there was a hydrogen bubble. And the outer building was blown off, the top was blown off. Yesterday's explosion in number 2 followed on statements that they were having difficulty injecting water and maintaining cooling of the reactor itself. Now, as I said, a reactor is just like a pressure cooker, but it's got a source of heat on the inside, even if the reactor is shut. So even if you cool it, if you put water in it, it becomes steam, and you have to vent the steam. And yesterday they seem to have had trouble with the valves venting the steam. So it's like a stuck valve in a pressure cooker. Then, of course, the steam builds up because the heat is on the inside and you can't shut it off. And at a certain point, it will explode. And you get a steam explosion. And that, I don't know if that is what has happened, but it appears that the reactor itself is damaged. And that could be a very, very grave accident. Now, it's accompanying these things with spent fuel pool damage, where you have a lot of radioactivity stored and building damage. So you've got a multiple, multidimensional catastrophe with the same endpoint of radiation, severe radiation releases. I don't know that these radiation releases are like Chernobyl yet, because we don't have the numbers, but it's definitely headed in that direction, way, way beyond Three Mile Island.
So just to summarize, we've had 3 explosions, one of which you think is maybe steam rather than hydrogen, and there may be some loss of containment of one of the reactor vessels, plus there's a fire. That's quite a list.
There might have been another hydrogen explosion in the spent fuel pool in reactor number 4. Now, this is all from media reports. You know, I went up to the Tokyo Electric Power Company website just now, and they have almost no information. It is it's just what Spiro Agnew would have called pablum. It's stay calm. We're trying to control the situation. We haven't had a loss of coolant, and that's it.
But, of course, the Prime Minister of Japan, Kan, was on TV, and he said that the radiation had spread from the 4 reactors and that it was being released in the air, and they've widened the exclusionary zone where they're asking people to leave.
Yes. Now, let me give you an idea of what the highest level of radiation that I have seen measured in terms of news reports has been. 400 millisieverts per hour. In American terms, that would be 40 rem per hour. Natural background radiation is 10 microrem per hour. So we're talking levels that are 4 million times the rate of natural background radiation. You're exceeding public exposure limits in less than a minute. And this is outside the plant, so you can imagine the working environment. Most workers have been asked to leave, and you've got, I think, perhaps the largest part of the problem now is you've got only 50 workers trying to manage 4 and maybe 5 reactor emergencies with broken equipment inside the reactor, and they don't really know what's broken. You know, like the valve got stuck. This isn't just a tsunami, I suspect. I think the earthquake has also broken and damaged equipment and possibly pipes. And they're having these serial failures, possibly because, you know, they're trying to force water in through these valves and pipes, and they're having a hard time, the equipment is having a hard time holding up. It's not just a loss of power, which it was initially in the very first reactor explosion.
So can they get...
In the first building, a hydrogen explosion, I'm sorry.
So can they get workers to continue to pour water on the storage pool where there was a fire and these other reactors?
Well, they're not, you know, it's not a bucket brigade. I mean, they're pumps, but, you know, in the spent fuel pool, you have to, if the top of the reactor building is damaged and the cooling system is damaged, then you got to find some way, like with fire hoses and so on, keeping water in the spent fuel pool. And what has happened in the spent fuel pool, apparently, is because the spent fuel is uncovered and the water is present not just to cool the spent fuel, it's also there for radiation protection. So when the water is lost, then the radiation levels get very high and you can't approach the stuff. Now, that is lethal levels of radiation. You die in seconds or minutes. And so you can't approach this stuff. And so they're having problems even with the workers they have. There are only certain parts of the plant, some plants that are accessible and workable. So it's a catastrophe that I can't imagine how they must be managing their personnel and technical resources. You know, and all of them must be worried about their families, and most workers have left. Who has stayed and what their competencies are and experience, I don't know.
So this is the first that I've heard suggested that the earthquake may have damaged the operating equipment at these nuclear reactors, making it hard to manage the loss of power and pumping ability. You mentioned this just a moment ago, Arjun Makajani. Could you just amplify what makes you think that this is possible or even likely?
Initially, we all thought that, you know, the diesel generators damaged by the tsunami, which was probably right, and that it was essentially the electrical equipment that had been overcome by all the water or the diesel diesel engines and so on. But the problems that are happening now and that happened yesterday are not due to failures of the diesel engines and the pumps and so on. They were having difficulty injecting water into the reactor. They had difficulties with opening the valve. And, you know, these are areas where the tsunami would not have reached. Of course, part of the shock of the tsunami would have reached, but if shock is going to damage, I would imagine that the severe earthquake could have caused cracks in the pipes or weaknesses in the pipes. It could have caused valves to shift from their settings, and then you pump water at a furious pace through these valves, and they may shift more. And so obviously there's some speculation on my part. We don't really know. Nobody can get inside to tell. But the reason I'm saying earthquake today is these problems seem to suddenly appear, whereas I think the tsunami problems would have appeared very soon after the tidal wave washed over this equipment and damaged it or made it unusable. I think these problems are unfolding because they were mechanical, lesser problems created by the earthquake that are now becoming bigger problems, and you have multiple reactors being affected. The reactor number 4 was shut down at the time of the earthquake. It wasn't operating. It was shut down for maintenance.
Germany has announced that it's going to be shutting down for at least 3 months, 7 plants, nuclear plants that were built prior to 1980. We have a lot of the same types of plants, these GE Mark I's, in the United States. I think there are 23. One of them was I think the NRC has just said they want to extend the license of Vermont Yankee by 20 years.
Yes.
Should we be concerned about that?
Fortunately, I don't think any of these 23 plants are in an area where you have this earthquake-tsunami combination. The two plants that are there in high seismic areas in California have more robust containment, but there you have a spent fuel pool issue that I think the NRC should address. But these Mark I reactors like Vermont Yankee and Oyster Creek and in New Jersey and so on, I think we should revisit the relicensing of these reactors. I don't think there's any cause for panic and saying, you know, everything should be closed at once, because you don't want to affect the stability of the electric supply and create kind of an gigantic economic problem or reliability problem in the electricity system. But I think the NRC has not been vigilant enough in relicensing these plants. In my opinion, before relicensing, especially these old plants, should be closed for 3 months, and thorough, every aspect should be thoroughly inspected and documented. And if there are upgrades to be made, they should be made. These plants are making money hand over fist because they're depreciated plants. It costs less than 2 cents to generate electricity in a depreciated plant when the capital cost has been paid for. And they sell it for 4, 5, 6, 7 cents. They're making hundreds of millions of, you know, a couple hundred million dollars of profits in a typical large reactor, in my estimation. And to require them to spend, you know, $10 million a year to fix them up should not be a problem, but the NRC seems very reluctant. I can understand Wall Street doesn't want to lose profits. They want to give out their fancy checks, but that's not the job of the NRC. And I think for companies to be issuing reassurances, don't worry, everything's under control, they should rewrite their press release.
These reactors, these GE Mark 1s, have an unusual design. They have the emergency generators in the basement where they could be flooded, and the pools for cooling down the rods are in the attics. Shouldn't it be the opposite way?
Well, you should remember that these plants were of the 1960s design, and at that time they were made and sold as loss leaders. Both Westinghouse and General Electric, to my memory, did this because they wanted to establish their technologies firmly in the marketplace. Light water reactors would be the way to go. They were already being used by the Navy. Admiral Rickover liked them, and especially the pressurized water reactors. And so they sold them very cheap, and they also made them cheap. And the Atomic Energy Commission wasn't very vigilant. It took whistleblowers and hearings and scandals, especially with these emergency core cooling systems, in the late 60s and early 70s with the Union of Concerned Scientists, to call these problems to light and split up the Atomic Energy Commission into the Department of Energy and at that time, Energy Research and Development Administration and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. But they haven't gone back and required upgrades. The building structure is not like the 5-foot-thick concrete or several feet-thick concrete secondary containments of later reactors that would hold up to much more abuse during the time of an accident or a terrorist attack than these Mark I reactors. And I think we should revisit whether we want more robust containments and what we should do with these spent fuel pools. One thing to do immediately is what was recommended by the National Academies in 2006. Empty the spent fuel pools as much as possible. Vermont Yankee has got, to my knowledge, more than 10 times as much spent fuel in the pool as Unit 1 in Fukushima Daiichi. That's not right. Some of that is very old. It should be emptied and put in dry casks to the extent possible. But the NRC seems very reluctant to take the most sensible and sober advice. Now, beyond dry casks, we've also said you should do like the Germans and have hardened storage so it becomes less attractive as a terrorist target, and terrorists turn their attentions elsewhere or, you know, don't do the things that they think might cause panic and havoc. But the NRC simply refuses to listen, saying stuff is low probability, and they have not paid attention, not only to people like me who are kind of running a small nonprofit, but to the National Academies and to Brookhaven National Lab as to the consequences of these problems.
Low probabilities.
That's right. This is the mantra, unfortunately. And as a Hindu, I can tell you that mantras should be in the temple and not in the technical marketplace. We've actually got not a very good approach to risk assessment for extreme events, low probability events that are disastrous. The way we calculate the damages is we multiply some estimate of probability by some estimate of the damages. So if the damage is $100 billion and the probability is 1 in a million, you would assess the damage as 100,000 risk as $100,000. Well, it's a trivial risk. But if you are in a $100 billion damage situation, and you could be in a multi-hundred billion dollar damage situation, you don't want to multiply the probability by the damage. You want to make an investment to avoid that kind of event altogether, independent of the probability. And if you can't do it, maybe you should change the technology.
So let's look now at the probabilities, the odds of what could happen going forward now in Japan with 4 of the 6 reactors there having problems and the situation still not settled. 1, 2, 3 explosions and 1 fire.
Maybe 4 explosions.
And maybe 4 explosions.
Yeah.
What next?
Well, it's very hard to say. I think a very large accident is underway. Clearly, there are large releases of radioactivity. If the situation continues to deteriorate, and if there's a full scale meltdown, say in Unit 2, spent fuel in Unit 4 is not brought under control, you have an accident that's broadly comparable to Chernobyl, and in the worst case, for long-lived radionuclides like cesium-137, it could be worse because you're dealing with accumulations of radioactivity in the spent fuel pool. That means besides the risk to the workers, and really my hearts go out to the workers over there who must be struggling, and the people who experience radiation doses, the habitability of the area will come into question or would come into question. Remember around Chernobyl, about a 400-square-mile area that is still uninhabitable. And that is one of the problems with nuclear technology. Every technology has its risks and severe accident problems. But here, the consequences of the accident don't go away when you've picked up the pieces. In fact, you can't pick up the pieces because they're so radioactive. It's very, very difficult.
So I hesitate to ask you this, but again today I must ask you, what's your greatest fear? What's the worst-case scenario, worst-case plausible scenario here?
Worst-case plausible scenario I've described to you, these reactors containment failing and the buildings failing with the spent fuel pools and reactor inventories of volatile radionuclides being released. We've already got significant meltdowns that have happened. And if it deteriorates, you could have very, very large releases of radioactivity. And for the workers, it would be high radiation doses and radiation sickness type of things, which has already happened to a few workers. And for the neighbors of the plant, it would be, for a considerable radius, not being able to go home. And then farther away, there would be fallout for hundreds of miles.
But the prevailing winds go over the Pacific Ocean, right?
Fortunately, yes.
But they could change.
Yes, I mean, they've detected higher radioactivity briefly over Tokyo already, which is about 150 miles away. So Chernobyl had fallout that required dumping of food as far away as Germany and Scandinavia.
In 1997, I think it was, the Brookhaven National Labs in Long Island did a study that projected out what the damages in exclusionary zone could possibly be in a worst-case scenario. And there, the damage is something like $500 billion. $500 billion.
$500 billion in 1997 dollars in the worst case for boiling water reactors, $546 billion or something. I can't remember the exact number. It is in the statement that I published yesterday. And in today's dollars, it'd be more like $700 billion. They have significant exclusion zones. I've forgotten the number. And the cancer deaths estimated within a 300-mile radius were between 1,900 in the sort of the least severe case, to 138,000 in the most severe case. This is from a spent fuel pool accident at a closed power plant where the spent fuel pool would have little or a lot of spent fuel, fresh or old. Fresh is worse, a lot is worse. And so that's sort of why there's such a huge range in the consequences, and also depends on the population density and where it is in your neck of the woods or in Indian Point in New York. The consequences obviously be much worse than, you know, in an area that's not so densely populated. Now, you can't apply these directly to Japan. I mean, these calculations for for weather patterns and populations and reactors in the United States. But it gives you an idea of the scale. The scale, general order of magnitude scale, would be, you know, an indication of the potential in Japan. But the exact numbers, of course, would not apply. You have to do a separate calculation.
I want to focus again for a moment on the spent fuel pools that are there. Given what you suspect might have happened during the earthquake to the equipment there, what do you think could be done? What can be done? And specifically, what is the risk from those spent fuel pools at this point?
Well, it depends on the state of the spent fuel pools. If the pools are damaged and the spent fuel is melting down, it'll be the same kind of problem. They'll be inaccessible. There'll be excessively high rates of radiation for, and then you have to hope that you can keep enough water in there and enough venting in the bottom of the building to prevent as much release of radioactivity as possible, and wait before you can extract this stuff. That's sort of the worst case. If the spent fuel pools are intact, and they may be in one or two of these units or three of these units, I don't know, then you try to keep these spent fuel pools topped up with water. And, you know, it depends on whether the cranes are in working order. This is massively heavy stuff, so it can only be moved by very heavy equipment, and normally moved by a crane in the top of the reactor building. And how they would fix those cranes and extract, I mean, this is kind of a third-order problem, like many others they're going to be, as to how they're going to decommission this terrible mess.
Well, Arjun, thank you very much.
Sure, thank you. I'm very sorry to have this commentary, because I just feel sick to my stomach as to how horrid it is, and I feel very sad for the Japanese people.
How soon will we know that we're out of the woods here?
Oh, I think it's going to be days or weeks. Days or weeks before we know the full scale of the problem. And the radioactivity releases are evidently going on. And you know, we just have to... I just hope the government and especially Tokyo Electric will be more forthcoming, so that at least the Japanese public can have the benefit of better knowledge of what might unfold.
Arjun Makajani is president of the Institute of Energy and Environmental Research. Thank you so much.